You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, a Kyrie when he make a trade, and nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game, it's very important, Millie.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics Podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for making us part of your daily routine, Monday through Friday. And this Friday, we are talking about a Game 7. Milwaukee beats the Boston Celtics 97-86 in Game 6 in Milwaukee, closing the Bradley Center forever for good, goodbye, with a win. Good for them, I guess.
But no!
off to Boston for a Game 7, which hopefully goes better than Game 6. You just heard Sam Jam Packard joining me, John Corrales, here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. We are the Rain and Jays. And disappointing end to this. Celtics just, once again, could not handle the switching Bucks defense. They just continue to fall into the trap of going into isolation when they feel like they get mismatches, which is exactly what the Bucks want them to do. Everybody knows it. Everybody says it. Brad Stevens says it time and time again on the sidelines. You hear the sideline reporters saying that he says it. You hear him mic'd up saying that he says it. Pass the ball, pass the ball, pass the ball. And the Celtics continue to just not pass the ball and tried to take guys one-on-one, and it does not work. Again, it didn't work, and they missed a ton of shots because, again, guys can't hit shots on the road. So here we are.
Yeah, it's the thing that's most frustrating about this game is kind of how predictable it all felt. Like, of course the Celtics – like, this was my feeling coming out of Game 5, was that the Celtics didn't have the best offense in that game, and I just didn't see, like, given what's happening on the road – and just the role players on the road, you didn't expect them to make shots. I actually thought the ball movement got better there in the second half. It just in the fourth quarter, especially down the stretch, they could not hit a three whatsoever. And they were probably taking too many threes. I thought they had some good chances there. They were at a run. It was like a 2-point game with about 6 minutes left. But just after that, they just didn't hit a shot. And again, I think they did a better job of getting more open looks, driving and kicking. It's just they couldn't make a thing, and that's what happens on the road. It just felt like they got underwhelming performances from pretty much everyone tonight, except for Jason Tatum, which is kind of not what you expect after Game 5, where he wasn't even playing down the stretch. So I think Terry obviously had a rough night shooting. I think he was 4 of 12 from deep. He really carried their offense early on. He was the only one making shots. He had Mook taking every single shot in the fourth quarter for the first 6 minutes. A really roller coaster of emotions with Celtics Twitter and Mook there, from hate to love to hate again in the span of about 15 minutes online, which is an eternity in Twitter land, but still. And I think Al Horford needs to be more aggressive moving forward. He only had 10 points tonight. I think he could have taken more shots, gone just the ball to him more in the post. But like the fact that the Celtics didn't shoot well on the road is the least surprising thing ever, because that's exactly what they did in games 3 and 4. And then on the other side of the ball, Giannis was really fucking good.
Yeah.
And it just feels like when he's doing like step backs and turnarounds, he hit a couple nice ones over Semi, over Al, over Baines. It really feels like you just kind of watch him play and go, why don't you do this every time? Like, it feels like he scores with such ease that it's kind of confusing that he has down nights, because it feels like that's kind of available to him as much as they want.
The Giannis step backs are...
they're unfair. They should be called travels. Not because they're actual travels, just because I just don't think they're fair for the game.
They are unguardable. They are completely unguardable, but they are not automatic. And that's why he's so inconsistent. Like, that's not a shot that he goes to very often, because it's not something that he does well. But when it goes in, and Kevin McHale said it a bunch of times on the broadcast, basically there's nothing a defender can do about it. He either makes the shot or he misses the shot, because that you can't guard it. You can't get a hand in his face. His legs are so long. He starts at the bottom of the jump circle and ends up behind the free throw line on the step back. There's nothing you can do about that. So if that's falling, then you shrug. You can just shrug. That's my biggest fear going into a game seven is, I know
Giannis has yet to supernova. He's yet to go, like, this was his best game. And so going into a game seven, he could go crazy.
He had 31 points on 13 of 23 shooting and only took 8 free throws, which only, but for him, that's not a lot. 14 rebounds was, I don't know how he only has one offensive rebound. It feels like he had 10. But Giannis, there are two factors at play going into a game seven. The home team almost always wins game sevens. That's statistically, I'm not jinxing anything, statistically the numbers say home teams almost always win game sevens. However, superstars often win game sevens too, and this is the opportunity for Giannis to do what you said, go supernova. So my biggest fear going into game seven is that Giannis just becomes this monster, realizes after this game six that, oh yeah, I can basically do this all the time, and he will try. And I think the Celtics, in my notes, I had a lot of notes about guys playing Giannis pretty well. Shemmy did a good job cutting Giannis off from getting to where he wanted to go a lot. I thought Baines did a couple of nice, had a couple of nice defensive possessions. Giannis just hit a couple of shots. You just, what are you going to do? And again,
the Celtics in the half court were, I thought they were pretty solid defensively. Like, yeah, Giannis hit the step backs and he just turnarounds a little bit. And like when he gives like a little bit of a shove to create space, there's really nothing you can do. But in the half court, I thought the Celtics were fine. It's just that it felt like they had a lot more turnovers than they actually ended up with. But they were just missing a bunch of shots. And then they met in the first half, especially, it felt like they just missed a lot of like plays or coverages in transition. And the Bucks did a good job of getting behind the Celtics, but the fast break points were absurd. And that's, I mean, going into the series, that's how we thought the Bucks would beat the Celtics, would be creating a lot of turnovers and scoring in transition. So if classic cliche, make or miss league, like it becomes so much harder when you're playing terrible ISO offense and then missing a bunch of shots. And then it's super hard to come back and stage a comeback and then not hit any of your shots, like put it over the edge. They got it tied once in the third. They got it within two in the fourth, but they never kind of put it over the edge. And tough to win when you don't score points.
That third quarter was so weird. They actually, there's so many wild swings in that third quarter. They played it even. And that seems like the least likely result, that they were 26-26 in the third quarter. But the Celtics came into that quarter down 9. They were down as many as 11. They came all the way back. And then they gave it almost all back to end up going into the fourth quarter down 9 again. So that was crazy. And again, the isolation stuff can be very, very frustrating when it's obvious that it doesn't work. And Morris is either really good or he pisses you off. And it goes back to the point that you were making about people on Twitter. He was infuriating tonight for the most part, just infuriating. But if he makes those shots, then he's a guy.
Then he's ISO Mook, and we're celebrating, and he's the man.
Right, yeah.
I can't be that upset with Mook, because it's like that is what he's done the entire year. He's stayed aggressive, and even he was like one of the few guys who was scoring there in that third quarter and early fourth quarter. Like, even though he did take, like, okay, third quarter, he was all right. Then when he started the fourth quarter with every single shot, it got a bit ridiculous. But even, I can't even be that upset just because it's not like any other Celtics were getting, great looks that they're passing up. I feel like we're just, that's been kind of a staple of the Celtics offense for at least the second half of the year. And so I don't think it's all on Mook in this situation. It's just frustrating because he was the one who was missing a bunch of shots. But, you know, if you look at the rest of the box score, pretty much everyone missed the majority of their shots tonight.
Sure. Absolutely. Only Al Horford hit 50% of his shots. Everyone else for the most.
He probably should have had more than eight.
Yeah, that's the one thing that we should mention, because there was a play at the end in the fourth quarter that it was obvious that Horford had, I forget who it was, maybe Maker kind of coming at him, but he still had time, and he up-faked and drove and passed, and Rozier ended up getting the ball and missed. That was an opportunity for Al. Like, he has to be the quicker, a little bit quicker trigger from three in those situations. Just, and he has been pretty good at that this series. I just feel like in a crunch time situation, he needs to just take that shot. Just forget about the drive and the kick and all that. Just take that shot, because he's our best option. At that point, he's our best option from three. He was 2 of 4 from three tonight. He should have had a few more shots. Now, some of that's not his fault, but he did pass up a couple of opportunities. But again, there's only so much you can do with Al Horford, because he needs,
I think he should, they should be
him.
Yeah, I think they can do more to get him the ball. I think they relied more on Marcus Smart being kind of the second ball handler tonight, and Marcus Smart. In kind of the most Marcus Smart thing ever, like returning, like following up an epic game five performance with like kind of a stinker. He was not great tonight. He did not do that much in terms of facilitating the offense. And I think, I have no idea if this is actually backed up by like usage or time of possession, but it felt like Horford had the ball in his hands less tonight. We saw less point Horford. It felt like they didn't get him the ball in the high post. I just think he is your best and most competent player right now. So I feel like he needs to be more involved in the offensive end. They made that huge comeback, I guess not a huge comeback, but comeback in the third quarter. Then he heads to the bench and just the offense completely falls apart. It's like he's the only competent one, or like the, I don't know if it's like a product of a young team, but it's just, he seems like such a calming presence and just is patient enough. And the offense just seems to, people make better decisions when he's on the court. And so I don't know what the solution is, because are you going to play him more minutes? He played 33 tonight. I guess Moose had 3 minutes and Baines had 9, but I don't know. Like, I guess just giving him the ball more, like turning his usage up, I think will be beneficial for the Celtics offense in game seven.
That's what I want to do. I want to find ways. They have completely gotten away from the Al Horford post-ups on Giannis, which when he sees Giannis and he's got Giannis on his back, he turns into this like raging bull. He changes completely. And you guys mentioned it on the last podcast. Horford backing down Giannis is one of the most aggressive post players I've ever seen in my life. He's great. They need to find a way to make that happen again. Cross screens, setting players up. If they know you're going to switch, then find a way to get them to switch back. There are ways to set screens that you can find the matchups and dictate the matchups that you want. And you can, if they want to switch, then go ahead, let them switch and get Al Horford the ball. You know, you can dribble handoff and then let him, turn and seal or set a back pick and have him go to you. There are ways to do it. So do it. Al Horford needs to touch the ball a lot more often, and that's the path to offensive success. Al Horford, either at the top of the key, finding players, or in the post, cutting behind him and finding players, or just letting him back a guy down, he can be the player that gets this offense kind of flowing. I also think that they should start Marcus Smart in Game 7. I'm back on that train. I'm back on thinking that he's the one guy that can get Al Horford some of those easy looks. They had one possession where he tried to do that, and it was just a little too deep, and Horford ended up traveling. We need to find a way to unlock Al Horford, because Al Horford getting 10 points on 8 shots is not good enough. They need to get him at least 14, 15 shots, just like Tatum and Brown and Rozier and Morris. He needs to be in that range. That's it. That's the bottom line. He has to be that guy.
Yeah, it involves him being more aggressive. And the thing I thought was most interesting tonight was the Bucks' decision to start Thon Maker, and Thon Maker's foul trouble actually seemed to be a big issue for the Bucks. He was very good, at least defensively, when he was in the game. And I think the Celtics, maybe he's just Thon Maker's that quick, but it just feels like a guy that size should be able to be like attack from the perimeter. And Tatum actually did a good job of that tonight and ended up getting him in that foul trouble. But I think they need to attack more, because basically when the Bucks go small with Giannis as the five, as the tallest guy in the court, the Bucks have a terrible defense, and it's just Giannis is not the best rim protector. And that's really when the Celtics made that comeback. And so the best way to kind of force them small is getting Maker in foul trouble, or making like abusing Maker and making him basically unplayable. And so I don't know what the answer is in terms of just like, I guess, focusing on that. But I think you could turn to Al Horford again. I would put Al Horford in the post against either Giannis or Thon Maker. I just think he's like a good decision maker and can pass from there, or can be aggressive and hopefully get them in foul trouble. But I don't know. I was, even though Maker didn't go off for many points tonight, it felt like he had a pretty big impact on the game. So it's quite a curveball. It's like a Barry Zito level curveball, and I'm not liking it right now.
Barry Zito. Wow. That's an old school reference.
When you think curveball, you think, Barry's lefty Barry Zito.
Yeah. Big old Oakland A's. Yeah, man. That's wow. Bringing me back. I think Maker is, if they want to switch and they want to do that with Maker on the floor, then I think you just find ways to attack. Look, the formula for success against these Bucks in the switching defense has to be, like Brad Stevens said, it's the second drive that's going to get results. You don't just attack that first mismatch. You force them to keep switching and keep switching. You get that ball moving from side to side.
Or drive and kick, drive and kick, drive and kick. Like, yeah. There has to be constant motion.
You have to keep moving. Keep moving, keep passing. That's it. And then if you get Maker switched on to, like, Jaylen Brown, like what happened tonight, then Jaylen Brown pump fakes him. Maker is what Jaylen Brown used to be on pump fakes, and still is to a little bit. It's automatic. You head and shoulder fake him up, and it's like you're using the force to lift him off of his feet. He bites on every pump fake. And so Jaylen tonight he was closing out. Maker was closing out, pump fake. He just sat there, got behind the 3-point line, and kind of jumped forward into Maker. 3 free throws. Now, of course, he missed 2 of those free throws. Which,
ugly, just an ugly misses.
Bad, but that's the formula. Constant,
you need
movement.
Thon Maker closing out or being like, moving and having his arms flailing everywhere. And that's what it felt like the Celtics offense was tonight, was they would just, they didn't never like really attack switches. It was like, okay, the Bucks are going to switch. Let's let them switch, and then we'll decide what to do. It just felt like they weren't playing with a sense of urgency, and it just felt like the Bucks were much more engaged on the defensive end, and just the simple facts that the Bucks were pushing back kind of had the Celtics just wilting, saying, okay, we got this in a game 7. Like, it's just
the Bucks switching is kind of like bass fishing or fly fishing. They switch and they throw that bait out there, they throw that fly out there, and the Celtics keep biting the goddamn hook. They keep biting and going for the bait. They keep playing into the hands, because a guy like Marcus Morris looks at the switch, and unless it's Dellavedova, it's what the Bucks want you to do. I hate to keep harping on it, but it's very frustrating when everyone in the world understands this, except in the moment, they just bite on that hook and go for the bait, and they attack that one perceived mismatch. And what ends up happening is they end up, the Bucks end up sending help. The pass is out of that, now suddenly become rushed, tipped, they are turned over, or it just ends up going generally badly, or it ends up being a contested mid-range shot. And like I said on Twitter earlier, this game can almost be summed up by which team takes the most mid-range shots and misses so the other team can go the other way and score.
That the Bucks weren't trying. The Bucks were kind of in that competition too.
Absolutely.
I mean, Eric Bledsoe was trying his ass off. Jabari Parker had some long twos. Chris Middleton just made all his long twos because he's a goblin. but it's the Bucks are still dumb. It's just the Celtics are not great. It's just home court advantage. It's kind of it's absurd at this point how predictable this this series has been so far. Even with the return of Marcus Smart, it's just. Each team has played better at home. The role players have played better at home. It's almost like playoff basketball follows this weird formula. But yeah, it's like, do you expect the Celtics to win in game seven? Of course. Like they're playing at home. It feels like they're just the team that executes better generally. They're going to be jacked up. The crowd's going to be insane. They're going to be playing with energy and, the Bucks are dumb. Like, I don't know, like other than Giannis completely taking over or Chris Middleton, also taking over, like I think just generally the better team or the smarter team and the team who's at home is most likely to win that game seven.
Yep. It basically what it boils down to. And I don't, that's it. I don't want to keep repeating myself. What I would like to see in game seven is more ball movement, more Al Horford touches, definitely more Al Horford in the post. I want to see Jason Tatum kind of regain some of that confidence because I feel like he's driving, and I think he's a little bit afraid of getting blocked.
Of course, like the ball slipping out of his hands.
Yeah, he's not playing. Like, he had 22 points, and he led the team. When I looked at the box score at the end of the game, I was shocked. Shocked that he had 22 points, because it didn't look like he had 22. But I think he got to the line a little bit in the end. Let me see, his fourth quarter, no.
He was 8 for 9 from the line, right?
It was his third quarter. His third quarter was the big free throw. It was 6 of 7 in the third quarter that he had the big production. So he had 10 points in the third quarter. So I guess it got lost. That 10 points kind of got lost in the emotional swings of a erasing 11-point lead and then giving it the right back kind of crazy third. But I just want to see Jason Tatum, when he drives, find that way to finish somehow, whether he's faking, he's pulling that kind of like almost a Rondo move or like, you know, like faking up with one hand, spinning and coming around with the other, something that can get him some finishes at the rim. Or maybe not. Maybe he just needs to go up and try to dunk everything because he's attacking, but he's gotten blocked so much. That I think it's in his head now, and this is the big learning experience for him. Like, this is the rookie orientation. This is where you learn a lot more about your game and a lot more about what you need to work on in this crazy seven-game series where it's just two teams beating the shit out of each other. And I think he'll go back after this, whenever this playoff run is over, if it's Saturday or if it's beyond that, he'll go back and look at, like, all right, I need to get a little bit better at finishing around the rim when all of this length is around me. He's a long guy. He can figure it out. He's done it earlier in the series, but I think something's in his head. I'd like to see him get more aggressive. And I kind of want to get the Jaylen Brown that scored 30 points in a couple of times back and just kind of get him going. Juice and Taco J need to kind of recapture that magic.
I think they both need to be more aggressive, and I think that's one of the things, I guess a positive from tonight is I think that Jason Tatum, well, he stayed aggressive in the fourth quarter and was attacking on kind of – we saw him hit the nice step-back three. I thought he was – generally, like, it's a good way to bounce back from not playing down the stretch in game four or game five. I think Jalen needs to be more aggressive from the jump. He only had, I think, two shots in the first half, or he had 2 points and only four shots. I just think he needs to be more aggressive. They both need to be more aggressive just attacking the rim and getting to the rim. We always, like, Jaylen Brown is playing at his best when he's just doing everything he can to try to explode to the rim. He had one drive that it just didn't make sense where he, like, basically just bolted through three Bucks defenders and got to the rim. And he has that explosiveness. He has that ability to finish. I think both him and Tatum need to just keep on attacking the rim more. They've shown flashes of being pretty good playmakers when they're kind of met with people at the rim or can make the right pass. But I just think they need to keep putting themselves in that situation, because right now the only two guys who can really probe the defense are Terry Rozier and Marcus Smart. Neither are great finishers around the rim or taking layups, and so it's not really conducive to a lot of points. But with guys like the explosiveness of both Tatum and Brown, I think they need to be the guys coming off curls, getting the passes from Al Horford at kind of the top of the key. I just think constantly attacking the rim is something that the Celtics need to do, and it just comes with more energy, and it feels like more effort.
We have a nice transition right into our Rain and Jays hashtag here from Gary Rocha. By the way, former Emerson College teammate Gary Rocha from my freshman year, at G_11. Shout out to Gary. What's up? There's a part of me that wants to see Tatum and Brown go off for 30 apiece in Game 7, lose, and come back next year pissed off and overflowing with confidence. It's an interesting take.
How about they do 30 in Game 7 each, and they win, yeah, and they then get their asses kicked by the Sixers, come back pissed off, but they still won a series.
Let me ask you, would you rather lose to the Bucks or lose to the Sixers?
Oh, lose to the Sixers.
Really?
Yeah.
I'd rather lose to the Sixers.
I just think it's valuable to win a round of the playoffs. Like, I know I'm just going to be in the Sixers for the goofs and the war on the InfoWars Twitter. I think, like, going in with the expectations, it'll be I just think you always want to win a round. Like, I can't lose to the Bucks right now. It's just Tony Snell hit a three tonight. That was very upsetting.
That was.
Like, Deli's got an obnoxious face. I really don't like Malcolm Brogdon now. It's like the playoff hatred that builds up, like, and it's low because it's the Bucks and they're such a nonsense team coached by Waylon Smithers. So it's like the least amount of hatred possible, but still it's the playoffs. And I don't want the Bucks to win. Right. I just can't do that.
Okay. at Horsehead INTL, Horsehead International. I feel like the Seas are just sort of resigned to going back to Boston at this point. Lazy fucking offense sent with 2 minutes left in the fourth. Yeah. And that's one of the things that I was afraid of. I wrote this before the game on redsarmy.com, and it goes back to the Brad Stevens quote, which was derived from a Bobby Knight quote. It's easy to lose. It's hard to win. And it's easy to sit there in a game six and say, you know what? Screw it. We're going back home. We're going to catch a flight tonight. We're going to go. We're going to sleep in our own beds tomorrow night. We're going to go to work on Saturday on the parquet, under the banners, in front of that crowd. You know, you're going to have Eddie Palladino's voice out there. It's very familiar. You know, you're going to fist bump with, Mike and Tommy before you get out there. It's all perfect and beautiful and comfortable. So there might be some of that creeps into people's minds. I was really, really hoping, and I really did think that Marcus Smart was going to make enough of a difference that the Celtics could close this out. And I thought it would have been a tremendous kind of progression, a big step forward. As many steps as they've taken, maybe I'm getting greedy, but that would have been one more. And it would have been nice to have this team close a team out on the road, you know, in a desperation situation. And then with the added closing that building, there was emotion there. So, but they didn't do it. And they'll have to find another time to kind of learn that lesson and figure out how to close a team out on the road. So, and that in and of itself is a learning experience.
Sure. Let's spin this positively.
JWarden317. He puts this in all caps, so I will give it the appropriate yelling. Why do we keep switching Rozier and Larkin onto Middleton?
Sometimes it happens.
There was very stupid time it happened. And it was at the end of, I want to say the end of the first half, Marcus Smart was guarding Dellavedova. It was Larkin and Dellavedova. And I'm going through my notes here. And Middleton, Smart had Middleton. And it was at the top of the key and plenty of room, plenty of space. Middleton was 4 feet behind the three-point line. Nothing was happening. And he kind of came up. Dellavedova kind of came up and set a pick. And it was plenty of space to fight through, go under, go over, whatever he wanted to do. And they switched. And Middleton was like, oh, shit. They switched. And he went and took the shot. That was a dumb. They got to recognize that if there's an opportunity to not switch Larkin onto Middleton, don't do it.
I thought they did a better job of Larkin staying with his guy or just like checking and getting back to the people. Or it wasn't as much Middleton over Larkin tonight. It was Middleton over Rozier. And at some point, it's just like I'm going to live with if the Bucks are going to try and do their whole offense. It's basically talking about what you said earlier. It's like a contest to see you can take the most contested long twos. Chris Middleton is quite good at that. And so he's going to make them. Like, it's a more efficient shot for him than the average guy, but I still don't think he has to work hard to get through that. And I think you just live with that. Like, there's not much you can do, for like late switches in the shot clock with Middleton on Rozier. They tried doubling that tonight. They started doubling that tonight, and it just led to the Bucks actually did a pretty good job of passing out of the double team and finding open shooters. And that's when frickin' Tony Snell beat you or Malcolm Brogdon. But, I don't know. I think you just kind of have to live with Rozier in guarding Middleton in the post because I just don't know what the next option is.
At JWarden317, a reply to you when you said hit Al on the roll. Oh, wait, you did it all caps. Hit Al on the roll! And he said, Tito can't do it. It's my biggest complaint about him, and it's mine. And I responded to you or quote-tweeted you by saying that would be on my headstone when this series kills me. The Celtics, and goes back to the beginning of what we're saying with Al Horford. They run this weave at the top, and Al Horford early on rolls and is alone in the middle of the lane. And there's an opportunity to hit him, and it feels like only Marcus Smart can do it. Or Kyrie Irving. And obviously, you know, that just makes me wistful and longing for days long gone. But yeah. Hit out.
You want to play dumb sports hypothetical and say, imagine if Kyrie Irving was in the series. Like, the Celtics could create their own shot at any time.
Are you kidding me? If Kyrie Irving was in this series, I feel like we'd get to the conference finals. We might get to the NBA finals if we had Kyrie Irving. The way this series is breaking, the way the East is panning out, the way the Cavs look, the way the Raptors look, you know, Philly,
you just add
experience. I mean, just add Kyrie to this.
You add Kyrie's playoff scoring to still a damn good defense, and they could go far. So thank you for indulging dumb sports hypothetical, because it felt cathartic to do it after this shitty loss.
Really? I kind of feel worse because I'm just like, oh, God, if only we had Kyrie. Like, this was the perfect setup, and the Celtics are just too hurt to take advantage of it, because playing the Bucks is perfect. This is the exact team you want, and they should beat them. I hope they beat them, but they might not. The Sixers in the second round, as people are overreacting a lot to the Sixers, they look good against Miami, but they're still young, and there is a way to defend them, and the Celtics have defended them well. That's the second round matchup that you want, and then Cleveland and Toronto are going to beat each other up, and whichever team comes out, you feel good about facing them. If they only had Kyrie, it's just like, oh, God damn it.
hey, you got to control what you can control and just move on from there. There's nothing you can do about it.
Now. I'm not Kaizen right
I'm
now.
Trying to, we're trying to rein you back into a Kaizen lifestyle because we're going to need to refocus for Game 7. And the more I thought about it, if the Celtics end up playing the Sixers, you best believe I'm going to talk myself into a Celtics and 7 pick in two days. Like, I'm going to find some reason to believe because you have to believe. Belief is a key thing about part of the growth mindset moving forward. You have to believe you can obtain your goals.
At Collective Mind, what is it about the Bucks that makes the Celtics offensively confused? They spend 20 minutes throughout the game playing like a punch-drunk boxer. Not used to that, even from the hospital Celtics. That kind of goes along with what we've been saying about the switching and attacking the mismatches. They see the one guy. Mook often sees the guy. It's, oh, I can take this guy. Shit, I got this guy. Everybody get out of my way. And everybody gets one of those in those super switchy Bucks defenses, and they all try to attack that guy like, oh, shit, I got this guy on me. My turn. And it's not conducive to good basketball. That's why it works for the Bucks. They actually, it's funny that they throw, here's a mismatch. Go ahead, take it. It works for them. That's what works, and that's why it happens. Rain and Junk hashtag. At Fricosis guy. Brad sounded like my father when I, quote, disappointed him. Game 6 brought out Dad Brad, not Mad Brad.
This just creates a whole bunch of questions about what Fricosis guy did to, quote, disappoint his father. I didn't see the Brad press conference, but yeah, in the first quarter interview, he seemed just very frustrated, and it makes sense. So I don't know. I'm just more focused on Fricosis guy and what he did to disappoint his father.
Yeah, I'm sure.
We don't know.
I'm not going to guess. At NP Nickerson, is there a thing as too much ball movement? Lots of wide open layups kicked out for threes. There was some of that. There definitely was some of that. It was almost like a bunch of Rondos around that for some – when I remember back in the day when Rondo would get to the rim and somehow kick the ball out for three, and you're like, why don't you just take that layup? Plenty of opportunities to take that layup. I do think that some of the Celtics are shook. You got Maker and you've got Giannis in there. There's a lot of long hands, long arms, big hands that have gotten blocks. There's been a ton of blocks. I think some of those guys are like, nope, I'd rather just kick it out for a three than get blocked. Like they feel like they've drawn all of the defense. Let's kick it out for three.
Yeah, I think towards the end of the game they were looking more for threes just because they're trying to play the comeback thing. But I don't know. I don't think there's a thing as too much ball movement. It was kind of funny to me where everyone on Celtics Twitter is shitting on the ball movement. And then they had like two possessions where they made like the extra pass a couple times. Everyone's like, you gotta shoot, too much ball movement. And it's like when the shots aren't going in, everything your team is doing is reason to complain. And that's why we have Twitter. Is this an outlet for our yelling?
That's it. At Robert Denton sends us the best photo of the day, the big conspiracy theory. Dellavedova has a tail. And I'd say that. As far as I'm concerned, the photo is irrefutable proof.
I'm going to say this is a sweaty premise at best. I can't. Nope. Maybe I need a higher resolution monitor, but apparently it's there.
I'm fully prepared to accept this as canon that Dellavedova has a tail.
Okay, I'm in.
Yeah. Much like a Shallow Hal. Like.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Classic Jack Black film.
At Diaz Alex 21. ISO Tito 3 sticks is not what we need at all, but definitely what I want. I just want to point that out. The hashtag is guilty pleasure. I also want to point out that he says Tito, T-I-D-O.
Hey, I'm do your own.
I like that.
I just clicked on his profile. He's in Milwaukee, so give him some credit for having to watch his team get their asses kicked on three straight occasions in his home city.
Do you think – at Neil M. Bornstein or Bornstein, I never know which one it is. Do you think Prunty has the special order just for men flesh tone? He's got a
– Looks so natural. No one can tell. No one can tell with just for men gel. I don't think he has a special order, but did you notice the Bucks owner looks eerily similar to Joe Prunty? He was the guy, the white guy with the slick back hair and glasses who was sitting next to Bill Clinton courtside.
Yeah.
What was Billy Clinton doing there? I think that seriously threw Stevens off the entire game.
You think?
Because he hadn't scouted for that. He was not prepared.
Yeah, I don't know. He must have been in there for some sort of Democratic fundraiser or something.
You would but it's very odd. Very odd.
Unless Bill Clinton's a closet Bucks fan or something. I don't know.
It could happen. Who knows?
Last one. At Celtics Mike. Red's Army John loves whiskey. He loves a good Maker's Mark. I do. That's true. Yet he hasn't used this series nor Thon Maker to reference it. I don't go for the low-hanging fruit, my man. I'm a more nuanced comic. I go for intelligence.
Also, what context would a Maker's Mark joke work? Mark is not really a basketball term unless he's like Maker's Mark his man. Maker's Marcus Morris.
I would say instead of the – so I went with the joke, the am I right joke, the classic Twitter am I right joke, like more like Thon Misser, am I right? I did that earlier. But I could have, if I wanted to go the Maker's Mark route, I would have said, looks like Maker missed his mark with that one. That would be my probably.
And it's good thing you didn't go with it because it wasn't great.
No, I would have, and I would have done it with like maybe a glass of, you know, Maker's Mark in my hand.
Well, yeah, well that would make it better, but you can't force the jokes. The jokes have to come natural.
That's why I didn't make it.
I was telling Celtics Mike.
please tell me you have a good junk drawer.
No, I have a terrible junk drawer. I don't. I was so frustrated this entire game that my inane observations just didn't happen. Also, watching the game on TNT instead of League Pass or some other version. There's just a lot like less when the game's not going on to comment on. It's just the same commercials again and again. So yeah. I literally don't have anything else to mention in the junk drawer.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's fine because the game was shitty anyway, so it doesn't deserve a junk drawer. That's it. And that's game 7, Saturday night, 8:00, TNT. So cancel your Saturday night plans. Park yourself in front of a TV or do so at a bar and get yourself good and drunk one way or the other. Just have some fun with it, I guess. Celtics, Bucks, Game 7 after a Game 6 loss, a very disappointing 97-86 loss in Milwaukee. Good thing is they don't have to go to Milwaukee anymore for at least months. So that's good. If you are not a subscriber, what are you doing, man?
You're stupid.
You're stupid.
Oh, by the way, I did immediately walk downstairs when we talked about that and say, hey, Jay, what are you if you don't subscribe to the Locked On Celtics podcast? And he immediately went, you're stupid. And it was a great moment.
That's it. That's Jay King's thing. But if you're not, I would question your intelligence. Because why not? We're good. We're fun. We're here every Monday through Friday. That's what we do. So we work our asses off for you. So subscribe. Listen. If you are not a subscriber, go ahead and search for Locked On Celtics wherever you get your podcast, even on Spotify, because everybody uses Spotify, so get your podcast there too. If you are a subscriber, go ahead and give us that 5-star rating, leave us the good review, and share every time we post, every single time, retweet it, share it, spread the word, tell people they should be listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast. Here on the Locked On Podcast Network.